go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, and a brand new broadcast week beginneth, yea, verily, here on the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room and be part of the merry multimedia extravaganza that is the live multimedia chat that takes place at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and bang, you will be probably not bang. But you'll be right there in the thick of things. Good evening, Jeremy in Vermont, and good evening, Jug of Punch, and good evening, Texas P, all cabling moderated by Lottie and Sparky, our third stage guild navigator, also who has folded space to become Man Cave. Indeed, indeed, we are off and running. And indeed, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. Seems like if you didn't know better, you'd think the Morans were listening and just vying for a position, jockeying for position, if you will. Because we got them lined up. Honest to Pete, we do. And I'm all raring to go. We finished out October, and Berg and I had a fun little Halloween. Bat Bob, as Bat Bob and the Legionnaire. Yeah, it didn't work out quite the way I wanted. Thank you, Jeremy, loud and clear on TuneIn. I do appreciate it. I was going for the whole retirement. I don't know. I was calling him like Social Security Batman, and duct tape doesn't work well with T-shirts. But the plan was to, instead of like the Batarang and the bat knife and the bat Garrett and the bat blackjack and all of that stuff. I had a bottle of milk magnesia and a box of Polydent and a bottle of Ensure. And so I was just, and never mind. But it was fun. We had a blast over at the Grove, which is the gathering space above Secret Sandwich Society. I posted a few photos. Many of you have already seen them. Mm-hmm. Yesterday would have been my father's 91st birthday, so I put up a picture from wedding day, the day that Agnes and I got married back in the 1990s, picture of my dad and me, and a whole lot of people saw that. I'm glad you enjoyed it. A lot of people remarking on the striking resemblance between me then and Ferg now. Yeah. It was nice. Thanks, Jeremy. And, of course, I would be remiss if I did not note that this is, of course, I needed a bat belt, Lottie, in the chat room. He points that out. See, the thing is, I was trying to use bat duct tape, and it didn't work. Next year, maybe. Next year. Oh, I don't know. Next year, I'll be somebody else. Maybe
I can go as Alex Jones.
Nah, nobody knows who Alex Jones is. What I was saying, this is a listener-supported operation, and Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge has been on the table for today, and I'm proud to say that it has already been met. So thank you very kindly to Bob and to Randy, who jumps in at the first of the month, and to Bill. Thank you very kindly indeed, and thanks to those of you who took Joan to heart, and we're gonna make a project of this. We really, really are. It was Friday when Joan called in on Friday on the front porch, and suggested that we need to get some subscribing going on. You know, she noted that if we could get 400 horn listeners, and there are way more than 400 horn listeners, if we could get 400 horn listeners to just commit to $10 a month, I could stop doing this, the mentioning of fundraising every evening, and wouldn't that be delightful? But we had some a couple of subscribers jump in and start a subscription. Thank you, Chris. So all told, yes, thank you, Chris. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, James. Thank you, Albert, very kindly. And thank you, Bob, and thank you, Bill. And with all of that having been said, Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge has been met, and hopefully we can go forward with and maybe get a couple of days out front on all of this stuff. We've still got the maybe this would be a good time, since the challenge has been met this evening, maybe this would be a good time to do a little further work on the equipment fund, because we're getting very, very close to we're getting very, very close to having everything together for what we're going to need to go forward and do some guest hosting, some fill-in hosting for our good friend Mike Malloy. I've been communicating back and forth with Kathy, and I've got the format clock. Found out today we're going to need a tone generator, but that's okay. I got a tone generator. And so we are, like I said, about $1,000 out from being where we need to be. And that will be wonderful when we get there. One gizmo down, two gizmos down, studio re-outfitted with computers and things to cut down on noise, ugly little noises. And two gizmos down, one gizmo to go. Jeremy says, in celebration of not ending up in the hospital for my newly diagnosed type 1 diabetes, I threw in that contribution. Well, I'm glad you didn't wind up in the hospital. Very glad, Jeremy. Thank you very kindly. Interesting discussion taking place in the chat room right now as to the relative merits of various brands of candy corn. Only at the horn, you know, only at the horn. And I agree. Texas T says Brock's, B-R-A-C-H-S, not B-R-O-C-K. There's a B-R-O-C-K candy company. They suck. Brock's, B-R-A-C-H's, is the only candy corn. And it's also the only butterscotch. And their cinnamon discs are pretty darn good, too. But, Lord God, if I even got anywhere near candy corn, I'd have to be crushing up metformin and, you know, snorting it off my tablet screen or something. But it is. So anyway, that's the goal. We're going to work toward getting, Joan had some ideas, and she and I will flesh them out as we go. But we're going to work toward getting 400 people to subscribe at $10 a month. And that will make things manifestly simpler here. And everybody doesn't have to do it on the same day. But it's real easy. You know, if you go to headonradionetwork.com and you go to the contribute tab, the first thing you'll see there is, would you like for this to be a recurring contribution? And you click yes, and $10, and do all the fill out, and you set it and forget it, and it's done. Okay? Okay. So we're 10 minutes into the program now. We've got most everything in line and in order and Anything that could ding or whistle or squeal or pop has been silenced. I found the last one just a moment ago. And that means yes. Yes. It is time. Don't you love that? It is time. Right.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. You have not seen or heard anything like this in a very, very long time. Not since at least last Monday. It's Moran Monday on the horn, and here behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas, we have them all. Right-wing Morans, booger-eating Morans, birther Morans, deather Morans, ninther Morans, tenther Morans, Bagger Morans, Bircher Morans, Libertarian Morans, Republican Morans, 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 more Morans than you can even contemplate. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. But for indeed, as it turns out, less than 17 cents per hour of programming at a $10 a month subscription. This is Moran Monday. We issue the same usual typical warning to people entering the Moran Monday tent. Hang on tight to children, small animals, purses, wallets, European messenger bags, as the Morans can get grabby. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. Oh yeah. No doubt about it. And where to start? That's always the challenge with Moran Monday. I say Texas. Where a big case is coming up in front of the Supreme Court of that state. Not the United States Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court of Texas. The same Supreme Court of Texas who once ruled that allowing children who had been beaten while being exorcised to sue the church for damages received would violate the church's First Amendment right to freedom of religion, which apparently includes beating children. That Texas Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. So, coming up here in, well, the not-too-distant future, according to KRGV.com, News 5, Rio Grande Valley, Texas. Action News Eyewitness Team Coverage. The Texas Supreme Court is set to hear arguments coming from the McIntyre family. Yes. As our dear departed friend Joe Bajant would say, borderers. Yeah, the McIntyres got themselves in hot water. Sort of. Laura and her husband, Michael McIntyre, pulled their children out of private school because they'd already taken their children out of the demonic public schools where they teach things like science. Science! Mm-hmm. And took issue with the state of Texas when having declared that they would homeschool their precious little pumpkins, that they had no obligation whatsoever to prove to the state of Texas that they were teaching their children anything or were, in fact, even capable of teaching their children anything. Now, if you're a homeschool family in Texas, you don't have to register with the state of Texas or local educational officials. They don't have to teach any state-approved curricula. KRGV here, by the way, in a case about education, says curriculums.
Shh. Don't tell KRGV that curriculum ain't no English word and you can't make a plural out of it by just sticking an S on the end of it. Shh. Don't tell them that. So that would be state-approved curricula. Yes, when you are a Latin neuter noun that ends in U-M, the way you say more than one of that is to change the U-M to an A, and thus curricula. On the side of the McIntyres, Laura and Michael, is Rachel Coleman, Executive Director of the Coalition for Responsible Home Education. That would be C-R-H-E. They don't spell too well at the, or they don't make acronyms very well there at the Coalition for Responsible Home Education, which incidentally is out of Massachusetts of all places. Hey, Lottie, I thought y'all ran these freaks out of there. But no. So, there's no obligation to register with the state, no obligation to teach any particular curriculum, no obligation to deal with local educational officials. Nope. Right. Here's the problem. The McIntyres are claiming that not teaching their children anything is their religious liberty right under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, under God. I like it a lot better with the under God part in there now, don't you? I mean, we got to have the under God, especially in a case like this. No, can you just take your kids out of school and not teach them diddly? And that means not teach them anything, and still not even teach them diddly. That's a complicated legal term, diddly. And Laura and Michael McIntyre say, darn straight! So they have been accused of failing to teach their children educational basics, according to KRGV. That they have no curriculum whatsoever, or considering multiple disciplines, that there are no math, no science, no language, no history, no nothing. There are no curricula. Mm-hmm. One of their children, and there are nine McIntyres, I believe. One of their children, Tori, is 17. She's the eldest. And she ran away from home begging, saying the reason she ran away from home was because, pretty please, could she please go back to school? They put her in ninth grade, the school officials did, because they weren't sure if she could handle work at any higher level than that. So eventually the El Paso School District got involved, and they requested Laura and Michael McIntyre to prove that their children were being educated. And that's when that's when Michael and Laura sued the El Paso School District. The Texas it was appealed upwards. The Intermediate Court of Appeals in Texas ruled against Laura and Michael. But and KRGV says this, so I'll say it too, the all-Republican Texas Supreme Court said, you know, we probably ought to be hearing this case, for it seems that religious liberty
is involved. Now, there's no way that Laura and Michael McIntyre could possibly use these words, so that means they've got some freebie lawyer, kind of the way sister clerk Kim Davis had a freebie lawyer, only this is probably a different group of grifting lawyers. Because KRGV reports, in court filings, the McIntyres say the district is biased against Christians and accuse its officials of mounting, quote, a startling assertion of sweeping governmental power. Interesting times we live in, 2015, second half of the second decade of the 21st century, and we the people declaring that all children should have some minimal level of education is a startling assertion of governmental power now. Freedom to stupid! Wolverines! More Wolverines in a minute. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There are apparently 1.7 million homeschooled students in Merca now, many of whom are being taught that Jesus rode to America on a dinosaur, where he instructed Lewis and Clark to attack Pearl Harbor in 1492. Now, the McIntyres pled that they were using a Christian curriculum for their homeschooling. They said it was the same that was taught in the private El Paso religious schools that her children had attended before she started homeschooling them in 2004. Oh, dear God. It's been 2004 since these children have had any education whatsoever. Meanwhile, Laura and Michael McIntyre were, I guess, co-owners of a motorcycle dealership. How does this have anything to do with that? Well, a lot of this got going when Tracy McIntyre, a brother to Michael, reported to the El Paso School District that he had heard one of the McIntyre children tell a cousin, well, they don't have to do no schoolwork because we're going to be raptured. Oh, really? That's what the state Supreme Court's going to hear in Texas. God, I hope they hear it on a Moran Monday. And you don't get to just go to the Texas Supreme Court, I don't think. You have to petition. You have to say, please, will you hear our case? And the McIntyres lost on appeal, Laura and Michael. Mm-hmm. And consequently, they said to the Texas Supreme Court, please hear our case that we don't have to educate our children because we're all just sitting around waiting to get raptured. Caught up in the sky, gathered together, flown away with Jesus in his holy rolls. Now, we do not have the full doctrinal details here. We do not know if the McIntyres expect to rapture fully clothed or naked. Because, you know, everything here on planet Earth is touched by sin. Even your clothing. So, presumably, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's doctrine. It's dogma. Just rapture right up out of your vestments. And I'll fly away. Oh, glory! Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, we need to hear that. Probably getting their religious liberty trampled there. This
this case matters. Because if in 2015, the second half of the second decade of the 21st century, we the people trying to create that more perfect union can't insist upon insist upon some minimal level of education, well, we're screwed. I mean, thoroughly screwed. Not a little bit screwed, but a whole great big lot screwed. All right, Pumpkin. What is 2 and 2? Rapture! And in 1492, who sailed the ocean blue? Rapture. Jesus. At one point in time, Mr. and Mrs. McIntyre were charged with criminal truancy. But, of course, because under the Texas Education Code, there's the Texas Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the TRFRA, and the charges were dropped because religious freedom. You got that? You can get away with truancy in Texas by claiming your religious freedom is being violated. And by the way, I guess you could say the horse is already out of the barn, because all but one of the McIntyre children are now grown and thoroughly uneducated, and Uncle Daddy! Who knows? This is... You remember Rachel Coleman back with the Coalition for Responsible Home Education? Well, she says parents should be allowed to decide how to educate their children, not whether to educate their children. Well, not educating your children is still a choice, right? More than 300,000 children are homeschooled in Texas, and God only knows. You know, I mean, and I want to be careful here because, see, I know people who homeschool their children because they think, and we've been one of them, because the schools are just so abominable, so utterly atrocious. And dangerous, even. I know progressive people who homeschool their children because, biology, 10th grade biology teachers who teach creationism, even though it's illegal to do so. You know what, though? It's Texas. And if you were to go and ask Donald Trump, you don't need no edumacation to get a job building a fence to keep out the Mexican rapists. Because freedom. Freedom. And I guess, you know, and there's a lot to be said, I suppose, for freedom and for freedom of religion. I mean, those, and we have proof now that when you put that First Amendment together with that Second Amendment, things can get real interesting real fast. You did happen to notice, didn't you, that the periodic random death roulette game at which every American plays. Thank you, NRA. Yeah, we love you too. You happen to know notice that the wheel got spun here in the last few days, didn't you? It got spun. It got spun in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And, you know, we have a dear member of our community there, and we worry. But Kevin is apparently okay. And glad we are of it. Mm-hmm. It, by the way, with regard to the Morans in Texas, and I guess any Moran generally, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas Stan says, for the Morans, there is no responsibility to the public good. It's juvenile at best. Emphasis on the at best part. Jack in Shreveport, under the subject line homeschoolers, says, these religious nuts surely would protect the fetuses. And they prove their rule that once you're born, anything goes. You're on your own, kid. Right. No, Kevin pointed out with regard to what happened in Colorado Springs, if I had been downtown this morning, I too could have joined the growing list of those who had the right to be dead by another lawful gun owner. The only officer-involved part is that the officers arrived only after this lawful gun owner shot his three victims and turned around to face the arriving cops, effectively getting his wish. Suicide by cop. It's terrifying. And we are... I'm at pains to put any more description on that. But yes, I mean, it happened again. We all stand at a giant roulette wheel that is, I mean, okay, so the guy at a, you know, this is where information from somebody like Carol out in Vegas would come in handy. He could tell us. The guy who manages the dice at the craps table, that's a croupier. Are you a croupier at a roulette wheel too? Because all I was going to say is that the roulette wheel and the table and the wagering area and the croupier are all provided to the United States via the Second Amendment to the Constitution by the National Rifle Association. And we all participate. We don't want to, many of us. Gun owners don't want to. They don't think there's anything wrong with it. They're perfectly happy. But those of us who love our families, who have children, who have neighbors whom we think highly of, we don't want to stand at that roulette wheel. And I guess to a certain extent, all of life is a crapshoot, a roulette wheel, whatever. I mean, you get in the car, there are certain risks. I mean, that's why you pay as much. That's why you pay what you pay in terms of your automobile insurance, because somebody out there has calculated the risks that you'll be okay going from, say, home to the Wiggling Pig and back without, you know, plowing through a school bus full of precious little children. And consequently, that risk is relatively small. The risks are different, however. I mean, it's a different risk. If it's coming, if it's raining out on the golf course, the clouds are blowing in, and your caddy says to you, oh, I don't think the hard stuff's going to come down for quite some time. And so you stand out in the middle of a broad open space with a lightning rod in your hand. It's a different level of risk. there's a risk. I mean, there's a risk with any medical procedure. I mean, you go to have a tooth filled at the dentist, and down there at the bottom of the consent form, it says, and the risk of death. We deal with risk on an almost constant basis. But the whole point of risk is to calculate them. The thing with risk is that if you are that problem child of the law, the reasonably prudent person, you don't take risks unnecessarily. Anybody who's ever had a toothache knows that, well, you know, you'll sign that consent form at the dentist because that little bastard, that rotting tooth, hurts. And you'll even go, yeah, I'll accept the remote risk of death in order to make the pain stop. But the thing is, those are risks you choose to undertake. But with regard to what happened in Colorado Springs over the weekend, and with regard to what happens every time some lawful gun owner squeezes the trigger and goes immediately to becoming an awful gun owner, you didn't choose it. Kevin didn't make a conscious choice not to go out. I mean, he made a conscious choice. Maybe he made a conscious choice not to go out downtown to downtown Colorado Springs this past Saturday. But he didn't do it because he didn't want to get shot. Do you see my meaning? We have an entire layer of risk imposed upon us by the National Rifle Association and by the people who think and say dumbass things like, an armed society is a polite society. Because this guy in Colorado Springs, he was a lawful gun owner. Absolutely lawful. And he was open carrying. I should probably do away with the stupid accent. He was openly carrying his deadly firearm, an assault rifle, semi-automatic, when he decided it was just time for some people to go to Jesus. And yes. He was, there it is, religiously motivated. Let's see. Here's the blog post. Decentralization, let it happen. Is my dad in a cult? Even worse, is it satanic? Because I'm at 230 North Prospect Street, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80903. Truth, that which was and that which is. Natural law, a body of unchanging moral principles regarded as a basis for all human conduct. You know, natural law, that's what it is. Natural law, God's law. That's what allows Sister Clerk Kim Davis to continue to flaunt the law of civil society. Natural law. Natural law was argued in front of the Supreme Court of the United States as a reason not to let a couple of guys go and pick out a China pattern and then get married. Transcription and commentary by Noah Harpam. Noah, really? And he proceeds to... Pastor Bill's message right away is that people have physical imperfections all over the world and that violent violation of what is the ultimate sign of spiritual enlightenment and the most laudable goal of spiritual pursuit. Pastor Bill then proceeds to tell you that miracles mess you up, especially miracles involving children. These are his words, and in classic hypnotist style, let me pull one out of Bill's bag of tricks. Repetition, we'll see this in a few minutes, too. Miracles mess you up, especially miracles involving children. Miracles mess you up, especially miracles involving children. Gotta wonder what he was like when he walked into the gun store to buy that assault weapon. And this thing goes on and on and on. Here Bill is giving another anonymous report of miracles that will be impossible to verify. Again, the actual subject is substituted in the mind, and it becomes San Francisco comes to Reading and gets healed of cancer. No knowing or understanding or wisdom required. I know this sounds loopy, okay, but I'm just reading it the way it is. San Francisco just simply walks into the Reading prayer house, and cancer is healed. And, of course, Bill is quoting an anonymous customs agent as the source of this miracle tale. And let's just call her customs, because that's what he's forced you to do by withholding information. And the point of the entire story and purpose behind the way it is conveyed, the insidious hook behind the scenes, is that in your mind he has initially set up the story with the customs agent, a figure of state authority, a master being a potential problem. Because it is a problem. He knows this, and now we're in all caps and we're screaming. And plays right to it. Draws your attention to it, and then obliterates it, and gets you to submit. He hates you at this point, though mostly because you're begging for it anyway, like spineless vegetables. Can we name the vegetables with the spines? Never mind. That refuse to admit they have any power to come to their own understanding. Vegetables have an excuse. You are cowards. It's less fun for him today because of this. He plays you for an ignorant fool to your face because he can, and you are. His intention is to destroy the correct and sacred natural revulsion in you, but it's just a script in the church at this point. Cue the laughter, and people beg for the implied responsibility to be obliterated. On and on and on and on this goes. But that wasn't enough. So he wrote for a while. Yeah. Apparently the United States Department of Customs and the Department of Motor Vehicles are engaging in mind control. Because the DMV, it's the customs agents and the DMV who brainwash you into believing in miracles. Sweet jumpin' Jehoshaphat. But that wasn't enough. Let's check in with Noah Harpam himself in his last recorded commentary before he went out and murdered three people and then basically committed suicide by cop. Shall we do let's?
All right, hey folks, this is Noah getting my blog live. Trucks and trucks and lots of trucks. No, but I did want to dissect a... just the beginning of a sermon given by Pastor Bill, a guy that my dad has been following, taking ideas from for 10 years at least, he and his family, two kids. I've been ignorant of it for a long time, so I wanted to look at it, and I challenged him just to look at 15 minutes of this sermon. I didn't pick a random one. It had, over 60,000 views. Been waiting and waiting, and I haven't heard anything. So I was going to just post my reply, and I guess that's how I'll start my blog. The blog is just going to be me with a video camera, and that'll be it. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, he's screwed right down to the ground, didn't he? No. But, okay, so the music, the music. But, so he wrote the blog and he did the video, and then because, thank you, National Rifle Association, he open carried his weapon out and slaughtered three human beings. Sorry for the silence. I mean, I think it's possible to make an informed decision about when to end one's life. I support that you know, so-called right to die states, right to die legislation states. But that's the whole point. It's your decision, not his. When the little Jesus molecules begin boiling away his brain, he doesn't get to decide when you get to go to heaven. It ain't Carousel, and this is not Logan's Run. But this is, you know, this is what it's like standing around the mandatory NRA roulette wheel, participating in the no opting out NRA lottery. There's always been a lottery. There's always going to be a lottery. Lottery in June, corn heavy soon. And I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to the people in Colorado Springs who lost loved ones, to this guy's dad, who probably prattled on and on and on about what a great servant of God Brother Pastor Reverend Bill was. Not our Dr. Bill, this is a different, no. I'm sorry. All kinds of different things warp people's perception of reality. But short of having a signed certificate from a certified and practicing psychologist that you are sane enough to carry a weapon either openly or concealed, there's no way that the gun dealer can know. All the gun dealer knows is that he wants to sell another damn gun because he's in the gun selling business. And he, meanwhile, has created for himself this sort of calcification around, moral calcification around himself that, well, hell, he's not dealing in death. He's dealing in freedom. Wolverine. And the rest of us just have to take it. And by merely living our lives in the United States of America, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever, under God, indivisible. I added the indivisible part for Gerald there. Said it would make it classy. Well, just by being you, wonderful you, you're taking your chances with the Friends of the National Rifle Association. And they're all nice people. I mean, Marveline makes a lovely green bean casserole with them French's fried onions on the top and the Campbell's soup. It's just tasty as can be. Sometimes she uses them fancy split green beans and throws in some of them Le Sueur peas. They're just lovely people until something snaps and they take their freedom protector that they've got 5 or 6 or 100 of, or in some cases 7,000 laying around the house, and just go outside to commune with the Lord by sending a few of his creatures up to spend eternity with him. And there is no way we can know who it is. Got a guy walking down your street with a rifle? Is that a bad guy with a gun or a good guy with a gun? Well, you kind of got to wait till he starts shooting. Call the police. Hey, there's a guy with a, you know, you're in Colorado, most anywhere. And, hey, there's a guy with a gun walking down my street. Well, Pilgrim, welcome to America. Freedom. Wolverine. Wolverines. but what do I? Well, nothing, Pilgrim. I mean, can't you? Well, we can't do anything. He's exercising his constitutional right. What about my constitutional right to be alive? Well, that's not so clear. Now, if you were a fetus, and in practical terms, and I ran across somebody on Facebook that didn't like it when I said this. In practical terms, there's not a goddamn thing we can do. If I could repeal the Second Amendment tomorrow, I would. I absolutely would. And anybody who wanted to have a firearm would have to prove a legitimate need for it. Now, maybe the legitimate need is going hunting, okay? And we go, okay, here's your certificate for one hunting rifle. Can't I have two? See how the first one works out there, Bubba. Well, I bird hunt, too. All right, shotgun. And I need something for the varmints. Okay, 222. You know, maybe along the way, you should have to visit a psychologist and get a certificate, and then stop at your insurance dealer and get yourself $1 million policy per gun. You see, there are three people who lay dead in the morning street of Colorado Springs, Colorado, who weren't planning on being that way anytime soon, presumably. And there's nobody to pay for their funeral. There's nobody out there volunteering. There's nobody out there with any obligation to pay for the first freaking carnation. Just into the box and into the oven. Did they survive for a little bit before they died? Huh? Well, that means they probably did their surviving in an emergency room. There's going to be a bill that goes with that, because this is America and capitalism. Even in the moments of the most profound extremis, capitalism, always capitalism. And this doofus didn't have any assets with which he could pay for their injuries, or God knows, a wrongful death action. You just take it. Oh, well, you know, maybe Colorado's got a crime victims compensation fund. Well, that'll be a fun little bureaucratic nightmare to march through, only to be told, well, you know, here's $312.67. That should cover the cost of the box they cremated your loved one in. One of the witnesses to the shootings held the partially blown away head of one of the victims, and just tried to comfort them as they exited this one little lonely opportunity to be what Kurt Vonnegut called sitting up mud. How do you think that person slept that night, or the night after? Or the night after. What are the nightmares going to be like? Who's going to compensate that person? Meanwhile, the NRA sits on millions, if not billions, of dollars. And when they see somebody laying dead in the street, they say, well, that's the cost of freedom, buddy. And nobody, you know, the politician who introduces a bill to repeal the Second Amendment or to rewrite the Second Amendment will go from politician to cab driver in about, well, I'm not even cab, no, no, not a cab driver, will go from politician to Uber driver in about 6.5 seconds. So we got that. And it ain't funny. Steve from Vermont. Well, we'll save that for after. Robert in Australia. Subject line, Third Rock from the Sun. I was watching an episode of Third Rock from the Sun. Two of the aliens, Sally and Harry, are at a DMV. Big, long queue, unhappy people, etc. If they make you go through this to get a driver's license, imagine what you have to go through to get a gun, says Sally to Harry. If only. And in the course of all of this, please bear one thing in mind. Ben Carson, presidential frontrunner in the Republican Party. Ben Carson sees a bullet-riddled body. And I mean, he said this. He sees a bullet-riddled body, and he doesn't think that's anywhere near as sad as making a gun owner register their weapon. Said that. Yeah. That's just one of the stories we can talk about if you wish to during the course of the evening, the first hour of which is now gone. But it is Moran Monday, and we have Morans o'plenty. Also, space and time for your conversation. You know the numbers, 304-574-8178. We'll call that line one. 304-574-8178. Then there's line two, the stress line, named in memory of Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype is Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, from anywhere on the planet. If you've never tried it, you'd be surprised how well it works. Thank you, Jay, for jumping in this evening as we fundraise. I presume. We'll just tuck that away over in the equipment fund. Thank you, Jay. And remember, we are looking for folks who want to subscribe at by Jones' suggestion. Looking for folks who want to subscribe at $10 a month, and it really does. I did my ciphering in Gazintas, and that comes out to all of. Well, less than 17 cents per hour of programming. Wow. All right, break time. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. And this is for you, Laura and Michael McIntyre. I'm Bob Kincaid.
right down and lands on the ground. And out comes the man from Mars. And you try to run, but he's got a gun. And he shoots you dead and he eats your head. And then you're in the man from Mars. You go out at night eating cars. You eat Cadillacs, Lincolns too, Mercurys and Subaru. And you don't stop, you keep on eating cars. Then when there's no more cars, you go out at night and eat up bars. Where the people meet face to face, there's cheek to cheek, one to one, man to man, there's toe to toe. Don't move too slow, cause the man from Mars is through with cars. He's eating bars, yeah, wall to wall, door to door, hall to hall. He's gonna eat them all. Rapture, be pure, take a tour through the sewer. Don't strain your brain, pain to train, you'll be singing in the rain. Said don't stop. Cause the man from Mars stopped eating cars and eating bars, and now he only eats guitars. Yeah!
Yeah, I can't resist a good bumper when the opportunity arrives. Rapture, Debbie Harry, of course, Blondie.
We don't have to teach our children nothing. They're just waiting for the rapture.
Jesus. It's 4 past the hour. Let's run over to line one. Hey, welcome to the program.
Cadillacs, Lincolns too, Mercurys, and Subarus.
But now he only eats guitars. And, you know, waits for the rapture while letting children go ignorant.
Well, I just tuned in and I happened to hear that. And I remember that from a lot of good times in the past, late 70s particularly, or whenever it came out, 78, 79, something like that.
Yeah, thereabouts.
Well, how was your Halloween?
We had fun. Ferg and I went out and... dummied up a costume and just it was quiet evening, pretty quiet, but it was nice to, oh, there were some great costumes out there, really were.
Were you in masquerade?
Oh, I was.
May I ask as what?
Old Batman.
Oh, dear. Well, was he dressed up like Robin?
No, he opted for a sort of Roman Legionnaire look.
Roman Legionnaire look. That must be interesting.
Well, he ordered the costume a while back, and I told him, well, might as well get some use out of it, son.
Well, that's true. So he was in full Roman regalia.
Pretty close, yeah. And the best one, and I posted it on my Facebook, best costume. There was a woman there, a young woman, who opted to come as Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. You know, the cigarette in the holder, the hat, the glass, the boonie hat, the glasses, the loud print shirt, And I saw her from across the room, and I just walked up and went, "You win." You know, I'm not the judge of anything, but you win.
Where was this?
It's over at Secret Sandwich.
Oh, the upper room?
Yeah. The upper room. I like that.
I figured you would. Well, I hope you had a good time.
We did. It was quiet. It was quiet. Just hung out. There was a matador, and his wife was the bull. A Beetlejuice, a very convincing Beetlejuice. And just folks up and down. There was a Campbell's soup, Campbell's tomato soup can. Took me a minute. One young woman came as Khaleesi from Game of Thrones. Took me a minute until I saw the little plastic dragon perched on her shoulder.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you all had a real nice clam bake, and it was all a real good time.
It was fun. It was fun.
Was this at night?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, at least you didn't have to worry about getting burned up by the sun.
Not that. Well, it wouldn't have mattered on Saturday anyway. It wasn't exactly hot. In fact, Ferg told me the breeze up his Roman legionnaires thing was rather unpleasantly cool.
Oh, well, what can one say?
Well, that's why one stays indoors.
I guess so. You know, I tell you, I was looking at Paul Ryan today. Honest to God, all he'd have to do is to get a long cape with a red lining and just, well, he would be a perfect Dracula.
I prefer Eddie Munster.
No, he really looks like he could be a real convincing Dracula. I mean, you look at this guy.
I get it. He looks like he could just suck, and you know what? He could just suck the life right out of America, and we'll try.
Oh, yeah. You know, he bought the, remember Parker pens?
Yes.
I mean, they were used in the signing of, for example, the instruments that ended World War I and World War II. I know they could have been in World War I. I don't know. They were in business a long time. But he bought their home. 5-bedroom house.
I had no idea.
Mm-hmm. He did. It was on CBS this morning. And it showed the house. It was a beautiful house, a brick mansion. Parker pens were the thing until, you know, they sold into another outfit. But nonetheless, that's where the current speaker now lives. I guess he has the means to live in such a fine...
Is that in Janesville, Wisconsin, or is that in D.C.?
No, this is in Wisconsin.
Oh, okay. I didn't know where Parker Pens came from.
At least that's where the house is. And it was, you know, after they became wealthy. I mean, the Parker Company goes back into the middle of the 19th century, making pens and stuff like that. And it expanded from a very small business into, one of the best fountain pen manufacturing companies in the world. But it is now in the clutches of our current Speaker of the House and his family. So he can fly back there, and he can take care of all the people he needs to take care of.
So, but I don't know. These things affect me more than they. I don't know if I'll say more than they should, but you know, another 3 dead people in Colorado, Jim. Another three dead Americans, dead, you know, dead. So some paranoid, doughy, pasty faced, paranoid, freaked out white person can, you know, keep, you know, 17 handguns at home.
Well, I didn't know about all that. I'm sorry that happened, but there it is. There you have it.
Yep, went out for a walk Saturday morning in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Nice, leisurely stroll with his semi-automatic military-style assault weapon, and just randomly, apparently set fire to his house, and then just began to walk out and eliminate a few people from the planet.
Oh, well, what happened to him? I guess they probably took care of him.
Well, yeah, I mean, when the cops showed up, he started shooting at the cops, too, and they, of course, shot back expertly, and the guy was... deeply steeped in Christianity, so I guess he figured he was going up to Jesus.
I'm not sure I understand. I mean, was he out trying to witness or what?
No, he'd posted a blog and he'd posted a video and talking about how his father was following a false teacher, and next thing you know, people getting shot.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
Any other good news over the weekend besides your Halloween event?
Nah, sadly none. It was just a quiet little weekend in paradise.
In paradise. Well, good.
Oh, and, you know, the Candide, right? Voltaire. This is the best of all possible worlds, right?
So he said. I don't know. All these things happen, you know. I mean, they happen so frequently that people are becoming almost inured to them.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. It's just another day. But it isn't just another day, Jim. I tried to delineate that. I mean, I spent a lot of time yesterday thinking about my dad because it would have been his 91st birthday, and he's been gone these 8 years now. And even when you are expecting someone to pass away, it is a brutal ordeal. Even if there's a certain amount of, you know, at least they're out of pain now or whatever, it is still difficult. How much more difficult is it when you say, "Okay, honey, I'm gonna take the dog out for a walk now. I'll be right back." Only they don't come back because America has apparently bought into this notion, and it's a racist notion. It most certainly is. That America's full of bad people. And, of course, when the NRA means bad people, they mean wrong-colored people.
Well, I don't think a lot of these people really discriminate. Do you? I mean, it seems as though there are equal numbers being shot down.
Oh, no. The shooters? No, not so much. But the driving impetus... You know, the vast majority, there are 300 million privately owned firearms in a population of, what, 330, 350 million people, Jim?
I don't know the exact number.
Well, those are the numbers. And there's lots of us that don't own guns. And that means that there are a lot of people who have a lot of the guns.
Are those the NRA statistics or what?
The firearm statistics are difficult to get because, among other things, the NRA keeps the government from keeping accurate statistics. But in terms of purchased weapons that we know about, yeah, 300 million. And, of course, there was the guy who was arrested in South Carolina a week or so ago who had 7,000 firearms in his home.
7,000? 7,000. Oh, my. He was definitely prepared for something, wasn't he?
Well, he was just exercising his rights.
7,000. He must have had a real
museum. But what do you say about somebody here in West Virginia? Because it is not at all unusual for they got their four wheeler, they got their nice home, they got their nice car that they buy a new car every 5 years, and inside they've got a safe, and it's about 6 feet tall. And inside that safe, there will be 40 firearms.
Well, that's been going on a long time, Bob.
Well, I know it's been going on a long time, Jim, but the problem is this part of it hasn't been going on for a long time.
Well, I can't explain that. I don't know why people are so galvanized and doing these terrible things.
Well, how about eight years of the NRA telling America Obama's going to get your guns? I mean, could that be part of it?
It could be. They're very powerful. I mean, you have remarked many times on seeing their headquarters for their lobbyists in D.C. and what a large building it is. They're very, very powerful people.
With very, very powerful weapons.
Yeah, they are.
Which means if you align yourself against them, one of their followers may come and, you know, do you in.
That's a distinct possibility.
Yeah.
You show us the times in which we live. But I just wonder how much of the gulk, you say the gun culture has grown because of their efforts to say Obama is going to come to take all their firearms the way that they said that John Kerry was going to come get those firearms and their Bibles.
And Al Gore was going to get them, and Michael Dukakis was going to get them. But it really, really got cranked up to 11 when the liberal Democrat that they said was going to take the guns also happened to be, you know, that color.
Hmm. Do you think these people envision there's going to be some type of Charlie Manson race war?
The guy who did the shooting at Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston was specifically trying to start one. That was his stated goal, to begin a race war. And of course, the right wing, if you march through those swamps, you'll find that every second post is the coming race war. They want it. They yearn for it. And then the other part of it is all these pasty-faced, doughy, paranoid white people who are sure that the government's going to put its jackbooted jackboot right down on their innocent, freedom-loving throat and come and take their guns. I mean, Jim, it was so bad when Barack Obama first came into office, there was a shortage of ammunition in the United States because all of these goobers had gone and bought it up because the NRA had told them, and even if you can get a gun, you won't be able to get a bullet.
I didn't know that. And, you know, of course, that sort of thing does not appeal to me, and I don't believe it.
Well, you know, you have remarked in the past that that you don't favor firearms because you have dealt with them on a mandatory basis.
Yes, I have. And they're not things to be played with, or.
But you know, a lot of people. I posted something about, you know, I said, you want a solution? Mandatory firearm insurance. And of course, there was immediately some NRA gun goon there, who you know, you don't love freedom. You're just going to take guns away from law-abiding citizens. You know, they're so stupid, Jim.
Was this in a public meeting this year?
No, this was just online. But they're so stupid that, you know, that my follow-up question was, okay, then, can we at least cut down on the damages occurring from accidental shootings? Because mandatory gun insurance would have that salutary effect. If you accidentally shoot someone, your insurance will at least cover for their damages. And hopefully they survive.
Well, hopefully they would. But I think what the government's going to be coming after isn't their Bible for their guns. It's going to be coming after their Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid. That's what they're really coming after. If they really want a booger bear to really get all head up about.
Well, and that's what this is cover for that. This is, you know, this is getting pickpocketed on a city street, okay? While you're watching what the right hand's doing, the left hand's in your pocket. So all these poor, dumbass, stupid Clydes and Arleys and Emerys and Eileens are waiting for the Kenyan Muslim usurper to come take their guns while Eddie Munster's over here, and he's going to take their damn Social Security and their Medicare.
Yeah, he's definitely after that. That's for sure.
I mean, I'm seeing a post in the chat room right now from one of our Canadian friends, Sentient Being, who says many young Canadians have bought hand cannons for fear the new liberal prime minister is going to take them away. The American
hand cannons?
Yeah, pistols, hand cannons. That's, you know.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I haven't heard that term in a long
time. It's the American disease metastasizing. I'm sure at some point in time in Australia, somebody will start screaming to repeal the Port Arthur gun ban.
Well. I don't know what the answer to all this is. I really don't.
Well,
to tell you the truth, I think it's, you know, I don't think there are any answers to it as long as people who are so stupid and unrealistic that they are afraid about the wrong thing, because, like I say, they're not coming for guns and Bibles. They're coming for other things.
Well, you know, I actually thought of you earlier today, Jim.
Oh, my God.
In this context, you know, the Second Amendment says that every state needs a well-regulated militia, right? I mean, that's the condition precedent to everything that follows in the Second Amendment.
Well, the operative word is well-regulated,
and the word militia, and in the early days of the Republic, individual states founded institutions that were designed to raise up the officer class for their well-regulated militias. Now, didn't they? Because you graduated from one.
True. Yes, I did.
And over here in Lexington, Virginia, just a couple of hours away from me, there is a little place called the Virginia Military Institute.
Yes.
Which is the Citadel, only different. And the individual states brought those things up. And Virginia and South Carolina weren't the only ones to do them. Some of them are defunct now. But they did that to create the officer class that would lead their state militias.
Mm-hmm.
And so if everybody just having a gun would be sufficient to have a militia, you see what I'm saying? I mean, there was thought that went into it. Good God, in Dodge City, in Kansas, you had to take your gun belt off at the door before you could go in and get served a drink by Miss Kitty.
Well, that's true. Because that's what the whole, I call it the Dodge City mentality. And, you know, this occurred about 20, 25 years ago when people were talking about this, when there was a rash of killings and things of that nature.
It begins as does so many of the things that are wrong with this country in the reign of Ronald Reagan.
Well, yeah.
I mean, the first little rumblings of that, of course, Reagan gets shot, and we actually got out of that the Brady Bill.
Right.
But that wasn't on the books very long at all before the NRA came in and said, oh, they're going to take your guns with that Brady Bill.
Well, I remember back in 2000 when Charlton Heston came down here, and I was screaming something out of his cold, dead hand, and got all these people upset. And then, of course, you know who got elected by 537 votes. I know CNN is going to do a special on that election later on this week. And the stuff that came down from it, and how literally justice was miscarried.
Oh, I have, God Almighty, I'm rendered near speechless every time I think about 2000.
Oh, I am too.
And being a West Virginian, I acknowledge reality. And if this state had simply gone for the Democratic nominee like it always had,
didn't happen.
Florida wouldn't have mattered. And that's why they sent Charlton Heston here to say, "You can have my gun, you goddamn dirty apes. You can have my guns when you take them from my cold, dead paws."
Mm-hmm. My God. That year was just an horribilis for me. It really was. Because I still remember watching the election when Florida went to Gore and then reverse, and Gore then conceded and then had to re-not concede, and then they got into all this stuff, and it was just 36 days of pure hell. And according to what I have read and what was on CNN, 537 people plus one Supreme Court judge made the difference.
You know what, and I've long said, Jim, that gave us George W. Bush should be chiseled into Sandra Day O'Connor's tombstone. Whatever else that woman did with her life, that defines it. She gave us George W. Bush.
Oh, that was a real fuck up on her part, that's for sure. Trouble is, now it's plagued this country from the past 15 years. And, I don't know what's going to be happening in 2016 or whatever, but...
Oh, we've obviously got a merry chase ahead of us. Listen, Jim, it's good talking to you, and hopefully again soon, okay?
Okay, well, listen, you take care. I'm glad you had a good Halloween, and there it is, and there you have it.
All right, you take care now.
Take care.
Bye. Our buddy Jim, not too awfully far from here. I suspect this is our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. Is that you, Kevin?
Yes, it is.
Welcome aboard.
Thank you. I just want to impress. Hold on just a minute. I just want to impress on people. The first story I sent you Saturday was about a blind guy in Colorado who received compensatory and punitive damages because he was assaulted by a policeman in the Denver bus station.
Yes, I saw that.
That, I sent you that with the title, "This Could Have Been Me," and it very well could have. That was before I learned about the shooting. And when I learned about the shooting, that very well could have been me. And I guess why I'm calling is because at the start of your and Jim's conversation, Jim didn't know about it. And I didn't know about it on Saturday. This happened at 8:30 in the morning.
Yes.
I get breaking news alerts from the Denver Post, the Springer's Gazette, two of our TV stations here in the city. Not a one of them sent a breaking news alert out at all day. The police didn't release any information about the shooting other than a shooting had taken place until late that night. We didn't learn the names of the victims until the day. We still don't know the guy on the bicycle that got shot. From all accounts, he was just out riding his bike. He didn't even know what was going on until the guy pointed the gun at him, and then he begged the guy for his life, and the guy shot him.
Well, yeah, right, and in the name of Jesus, of course.
Yeah, and...
I mean, I remember, Kevin, our very first conversation, yea, verily, lo, these many years ago, had to do with where you were relative to your faith and things like that, and I know that mattered and matters to you, but honest to God, I'm because you know this is a standard that we apply to Muslims, okay? If a Muslim jaywalks, there are a bunch of right wing Americans screaming, "Why won't the Islamics disavow and criticize that miserable jaywalker.
Yep.
So I would like a sincere attempt at an explanation of what we're supposed to make of these people when one of their own, one of their faithful own, does something like this.
They completely ignore it. The article in the Springs paper today mentioned about this guy's blog post, but it did not sound, unless you read the blog post, like it had anything to do with other than being anti-religion because of his father's...
Oh, no, no, he wasn't anti-religion. He's quoting from Scripture. This is a
I know,
a doctrinal and dogmatic.
Saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. They made it out to sound like it was... He shot these people because he was anti-religion because of his father's involvement with this church in California. They did mention that the guy was a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they ignore it. And if you remember that conversation I had with you all those years ago, one of the things that really, I won't say turned me off completely against religion, but certainly helped, was one of these nutcases telling me I just didn't have enough faith to be healed. And I was just starting to go through the vision loss. And, you know, how do you have the heart, or lack thereof, to tell a person who is dealing with any disease, well, you just don't have enough faith to be healed? You know, and had I not been in a public...
No. Okay, let me simply say that person... needs a butt kicking of righteous proportions.
Well, had I not been in a public place, Bob.
I know, but well, you just, no. See, you just don't have enough faith to keep me from kicking your butt.
Yeah, I mean it, but this shooting, Bob. I work as an EMT. I work for the coroner. I've been on tons of crime scenes, but just in my time. Being without vision here in Colorado Springs, I've had my next-door neighbor shot. We had the shooting just down the road from me where the guy shot his daughter sneaking in from breaking curfew, and he shot her because he thought she was a burglar. And then we had this shooting this week, plus the Aurora shootings, plus the, you know, the shootings at the school up there. I can't think of the name. But you get the idea, that's just in the last 15 years.
Well, yeah, I mean, I said at the beginning, because I looked to the Reagan administration for the beginning of everything awful in this country, and I think to a certain extent, but yeah, it certainly, the NRA ramps up in a big way in the Clinton years. And that was over the Brady Bill and mandatory wait periods and an assault weapons ban.
Yeah, and Sarah Brady was no liberal.
Oh, hell no.
She just had her husband shot out from under her, so to speak, and wanted to do something about the epidemic of guns, and they turned her into a monster for proposing that we do something about this.
And you know what's interesting is, in the wake of Ronnie's shooting, you know, Nancy was like, you know, maybe keeping guns out of the hands of the criminally insane is a good idea. But see, I don't want to put too fine a point on it, Kevin. We cannot come to consensus now in this country that keeping firearms out of the hands of the criminally insane is a bad idea or a good idea. We can't come to a consensus on the fact that crazy people ought not have guns. Because what if a bad guy with a gun comes after a crazy person with a gun? Well, then the crazy person with a gun might be the good guy with a gun.
And how do you know the difference? Because when you were playing that clip of this kid, other than sounding clinically insane, he didn't sound like a killer.
No, he sounded, you know, like your typical loopy kumbaya kind of Christian.
Yeah. So when he walked in, and that was the thing that struck me, there was actually a person that did call when they saw the guy walking down the street with the gun. But how many people didn't call? Oh, it's just another guy, open carrying. And you know what was playing on the radio at the exact time those shootings were happening on one of our stations? One of those Second Amendment gun shows. Protect our Second Amendment.
Of course it was.
At the exact time these shootings were taking place. And you know what I'd love to do if I had the technology? I'd love to get the police recordings of the shooting, of the victims, of the anguish, and play them right up against that idiot on the radio preaching about, we got to protect our Second Amendment gun rights. Because it's one thing to say it's a right, it's another thing when it's your son, daughter, mother, sister, brother that's lying dead on the street. And the guy on the bicycle that got shot laid on the street for 11 hours while I process that crime scene. Now, I don't know who that guy was.
Oh, Jesus God, they Michael Browned him.
Yeah, but they loaded the guy that did the shootings. They loaded him up immediately and took him off. And he was very obviously dead. He had been shot 20-plus times. They loaded him immediately up and took him off. I would love to know the answer as to why that happened and nothing got done about the guy that, the innocent victim on the bicycle that got shot. You know, I mean, it's just...
Because whatever evidence they gather is going to disappear down the memory hole because, again, the NRA will not let us keep meaningful statistics on how many people die, get maimed, wounded, whatever. I mean, there are so many good examples, Kevin. For instance, in Florida, and I know you're familiar with Florida, they wanted to ask children by way of assessing risks in the home. Doctors would say, "And are there guns in the home?"
Yep.
And the NRA had an absolute conniption. Well, they're just trying to find out who's got guns. So when they decide to put their jackboot boots down on our freedom loving necks, they can take her guns away. When in fact, this much is verifiably true. Guns in the home are a distinct health risk for children.
Yep. When I was about 16, one of my next door neighbors shot his foot cleaning a gun. And that was back when I was 16, and, you know, we were kind of raised around gun culture, and you should know better, even at 16, than to check a gun before you clean it. But, yeah.
I mean, sure, West Virginia hunter safety, rule one, all guns are presumptively loaded.
Yep. And before rule one, all guns are deadly.
Right, sure.
You know,
but of course, you know, and then that means we go back to the Kentucky story, where the .22 rifle made for 5-year-olds, the Cricket single shot .22 rifle that was used by one child to kill her sibling or he killed his sibling. When asked about it, the response was, "Well, I just think we shouldn't politicize this." And Granny said something like, "Well, obviously it was God's will." Well, then if it was the will of that God, then why do you worship such a bloodthirsty monstrosity?
It was, yeah, and it's, I don't know, I'm at a loss for words because I've dealt with it professionally, I've dealt with it personally, but not as personally as the people that are dealing with it today. Because these two girls that got killed, they weren't doing anything other than being two women recovering from alcoholism, living in an apartment where they were living out their lives, doing nothing on a Saturday morning but what you, any normal person does on a Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy on the bike was doing nothing but riding down the street. Yeah. And you know what? If it had been a couple of weeks before or after, there could have been a whole lot more people downtown than this past Saturday morning. And the death toll could have been a lot higher. It's only by luck. We had a wrestling tournament here in the city, state wrestling tournament. At the same time this was going on, and I firmly believe that's why they had a news blackout about this, because the parents would have just flooded the downtown trying to get their kids out of that school because they put it on lockdown immediately. But I think that's why we never got a breaking news alert about it. And I don't blame them, necessarily blame the police for that or the TV or news, but you know, think about it. What was to have stopped that guy from going to that state wrestling tournament and opening fire? Nothing. If he'd have decided
just the voices in his head that said, shoot now, shoot now.
Yeah, exactly. And I have no problem with somebody who's saying, you know, I think the first thing that ought to be on a questionnaire on whether you should own a gun should be this. If you're faced with a situation where your life is in danger, do you feel comfortable killing another person? And if you answer no on that, then maybe you qualify to have a gun. Because you're at least going to think about it before you pull the trigger. These people that have this fantasy about being Rambo, you know, oh, I'm going to get the drop. The police didn't get the drop on this guy. You know, they only arrived after the three people were shot. And even if those women had a gun inside their apartment, it would have done them no good because they were dead before they could have reached it.
Right, because they were ambushed.
Yeah,
I mean every domestic, every civil society shooting is a form of an ambush. I mean, there's nobody lying, and this all goes to the paranoid fantasies of the right wing. You do know that part of the reason we wound up with the shootout at the OK Corral was because the Earp brothers were trying to enforce a gun free zone there in Tombstone, and see, that just goes to show.
But
there's a little bit of straw man to this, Kevin, but it's not really, because I saw it actually populating across social media. You just want to take away the guns from the lawful gun owners, and that'll leave us at the mercy of the thugs. And then the obligatory reference. Well, what about Chicago? These people are so unutterably stupid.
And then they think that if the government were to come in and try to take us over, that their little piddly AR-15 against what the government's got in the way of bombs
and
planes.
Yeah. No, they're going to, no, Cletus, they're going to drone your ass when the time comes, okay?
Yeah. And
So Urban Prospector in the chat room here says, you know, I heard it here first. It's Monday evening, and there was a mass murder. But see, statistically, it doesn't count as a mass murder because there were only three. All right, the murderer doesn't count. But I heard it here first. What does that say about this country? They didn't break in on the news there in Colorado Springs, as you said. I wasn't watching at the time, but I presume at the time that it broke, CNN and God knows, Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda, were probably still broadcasting something about Donald Trump's hair or Ben Carson's adventure at Popeye's. And, of course, MSNBC was running prison porn. No, they probably had their morning programming on. It was probably Melissa Harris Perry by then, Mountain Time to Eastern Time. It was 10:30. Yeah, 10:30 in the morning Eastern Time, right?
Yeah, roughly. 10:30, 10:45. You know, and I
But maybe that's how we frame it, Kevin. What about okay, so we can't take anybody's guns away because after all, how are we ever going to defend ourselves from the hordes of bad people with guns in this country? Okay, let's just take that. We're not even going to argue with that. Can we do something about the accidental shootings? Can we set it up so that people who are accidentally shot by lawful gun owners have some recourse other than a protracted court battle against someone who has no assets in the first place except their guns?
Yep.
Maybe that's a way to start the conversation. I don't know, Kevin. I don't know. But it is awful good to talk to you, and I'm glad you called in. I appreciate your perspective. I really, really do.
Thanks for letting me in a little, because it just, you know, I didn't know anybody personally from this shooting.
Let me get a little clarity before we go. One of the people who was killed was on a bicycle?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I've got a good friend that's all he could drive. He chooses to ride his bike to work and back.
Well, interestingly, Roger just wrote in from Oregon.
Yep.
And he said, subject line, bicyclist shot in Colorado Springs in 2003. Roger said, I don't know if this is who he's talking about, but I included a civilian who was shot riding his bicycle home from work by a recently returned soldier from Iraq on the remembrance rug. Roger maintains something called the remembrance rug, and we should get him to talk about it in greater detail at some point in time. That bicyclist's name was Robert F. Vigil, and that was 2003. It was 12 years ago.
I remember, yeah. His mother's been in the news a couple times since then. Talking about the senseless killing, which all of these are. But anybody listening to your show, I know, gets it. It could have been any one of our friends or family, but to these right wingers, that's what I'm having trouble with. How to get it across to them? It could have been your son or your daughter. And what would you do? You know, and I'm at a loss, you know, to explain it to these people, because they just fall back on their stupid little positions of fantasy.
Yeah, you know, they're dirty. These are the truly dirty little fantasies. You know what I mean? Not the one. I'm not talking about the fantasy somebody has where, ooh, I'm a pirate, and oh, you're the princess. No. I'm talking about the really dirty ones where you sit around fingering a firearm and you think someday there's going to be a bad guy and I'm going to kill him. And I'm gonna gut all dirty hairy with both hands. And I'm gonna squeeze the trigger slowly. And I'm gonna bang 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 bang. And I'm gonna pump 17 rounds into the bad guy. And then everybody's gonna talk about what a hero I am. Ooh.
Yep. Well, anyway, thank you, Bob.
My pleasure, Kevin. You take care and have a good evening.
Yep.
Maybe we'll talk under more lighthearted circumstances sometime.
Yeah, I'm going
to
work at that.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
Bye. Thanks, Bob.
Our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. And yea, verily, lo, and forsooth, it is Carol Baker. Hey, Carol.
Hey, neighbor. How are you?
Hi, you know, hanging on by a thread.
Yeah, well, let's. You want to get out of the toxic swamp for a little bit?
Well, we can try, but I just wanted to note that apparently you do, too, because I saw you saying something like, I'm getting to the point where I'm thinking I'm suffering from agoraphobia. I just don't want to leave the house.
It's true, because I feel like it's just a big game of skeet shoot, and I'm a clay target.
You all can just call me Pigeon.
No shit. I have no desire to leave the house. Movie theaters, out of the question. Vaughn asked me if I wanted to go to the movies last week, and I was like, are you out of your fucking mind?
Amazon delivers groceries now.
Don't I know it?
I'm not sure how good they are at the whole ground beef, but then again, how many of us can do that?
Well, but right, exactly. But hey, they deliver my dog food, all kinds of stuff.
So, you know, there's that.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was, how about them Royals?
And I know you couldn't care less about the World Series, but...
I kind of couldn't, but, you know, because here's the thing.
But after a while, you started paying attention, didn't you?
Well, everybody in Kansas City is in such a good mood today, and it's just nice to see the city like this. I mean, everybody is in a good mood. I really could give a shit less, mostly because... after so many years of living in Chicago, where perennial losers, you know, the Cubs, I don't care how they play, they are, without a doubt, the most beloved team by their city anywhere. And I don't care how they play, those people love them. And that park is so iconic. It is so beautiful. They screwed it up when they put lights in it. It was awesome getting to go to all those day games because, you know, that's what all those team building exercises were.
Yeah.
For the office. It was an excuse to go sit in the bleachers at Wrigley Field.
And drink what? Old style?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. But the thing of it is when you've lived in a town where the team is beloved no matter what, they love you no matter what. Then it's different when you move to a city like Kansas City, and the fans have been somewhat fair weather when the Royals weren't playing. Excuse me, when the Royals weren't playing so well, nobody really gave a damn about it. The park was half empty most nights, and then when they started playing well, it's like, ooh, look at what we got. And the Chiefs are the same way. You know, I think they lost their first five games. The joke is they couldn't beat, you know, the Crippled Children's Hospital. You know, I have a t-shirt that says, Go Chiefs!
And take the Royals with you.
It says, and take the Royals with you.
I have fond memories of the baseball stadium out there. Went to a few ball games. It was good fun.
It's a pretty stadium.
Oh, sure. And the blue slushy machines now, you know. Are the fountains still blue?
Oh my God.
The fountains will be blue until they freeze.
And they'll probably stop dying them here after tomorrow, I hope. Tomorrow is the big parade. I guess it's written in to the Major League Baseball Players Union that if you win the World Series, they have to... The parade that they have for you has to be held within 48 hours after the win. Because these guys want to go home. They're done.
Yeah, the season is over. They want to go where it's warm. There's fishing to be done. There's golf to be played.
Absolutely. So you've got half of Kansas City complaining that it isn't, that the parade isn't going to be held on Saturday. It has to be held tomorrow, or not at all. They've waited for so long to be able to do this. I mean, we had, like, the longest losing streak to get into the playoffs, like 26 years or something, to even qualify for the playoffs in the history of Major League Baseball.
Oh, no, the Royals were bad for a very, very long time.
They were bad for a very long time.
But you know what? On the other hand, you mentioned the club in Chicago. It is 5 minutes before 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the second day of November 2015, and I just have to let the baseball fans out there know that the Cubs have already been mathematically eliminated.
I don't care. I love the Cubs. The night that they made it into the playoffs before they got beat by the Mets, there was a video of a guy who was like 3 miles away from Wrigley Field. You could hear them singing the Steve Goodman song, Go Cubs Go. Crystal clear. I mean, you gotta love a city like that who loves their team. like that. But the thing of it is they've decided that so many teachers have called in sick tomorrow because they want to go to the parade, that literally they had to close some schools because they couldn't get enough substitute teachers. So they just closed the schools and decided to let the kids out for the day so that they could go down to the parade. The city conservatively estimated that there would be 250,000 people along this 2.5 mile long parade route. Everybody is saying it's going to be at least double that. And all of the suburban schools let out. And Kansas City, Missouri School District was being very kind of shitty about this. And they were telling the kids, no, if you're gone from school tomorrow, you better come back with a doctor's note or you're going to get an unexcused absence. There will be punishment. There will be all kinds of stuff. And so, in essence, all the white kids from the suburbs get to go to the parade and the black kids had to stay in school. Well, within the last 15 minutes, the Kansas City School District caved. And they're going to close school tomorrow and let the kids go to the parade. And my bet is most of them will go, I mean, this is probably going to be like a once-in-a-lifetime event.
Yeah, and you know what? Out of it all, the mayor of Kansas City came up on the short end of the stick. Because what was the bet? Excuse me. Had the Royals lost, he would have had to deliver ribs to Mayor de Blasio in New York City.
Oh, no, it was more than that. He had to do a dance and a tutu.
Yeah, but as it stands, the mayor of Kansas City just gets a cheesecake.
Well, I think he gets probably more than one. And de Blasio still has to pay up on the dance.
Well, that would be fun.
There must be an interpretive dance. Sly James is no fool. it was definitely going to go his way. And then, of course, you know, when they hand out the World Series rings, they always give them out on the first day of the season. You know, in April, that's when they give out the rings. You will not believe who they're playing that day. Oh, yes. Awkward. The Mets. But that was planned a long time before the last couple of weeks. But it sounded like a bomb was going off here last night at 11:30. I wasn't naturally watching the game because I didn't care. And I really kind of, I mean, I care a little, but not enough to, you know, like, turn on the game. And I thought, what in the hell's going on? I thought, oh, the Royals. So, sure enough, I Googled the Kansas City Royals, and I saw that they had just won the game. Well, Slate.com has the weather. They have a satellite image of Kansas City at 11:38 last night.
Yeah.
It looked like a nuclear bomb went off. Because of all of the fireworks and the guns going off at once. Because, you see, we can't just have regular old fireworks. Everybody's, you know, got to get the Freedom Protectors out. Which is why, again, I stay in the house.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. The last time I heard it that loud out here was the night that George Zimmerman was acquitted. They were having big parties out here, and
we can't stay out of the swamp, can we?
Well, you know, it is where I live, honey. It's about, you know, I'm probably like 40 miles out of Kansas City.
Well, I mean, but that ain't far enough. No. Not by a long shot.
No, but it was kind of cool watching it go off. Watching it all on the radar, because if you watch it all go off at once, it looks like a nuclear bomb hit Kansas City.
And you know, there may be some people in New York who are thinking not quite near enough. Because what a way to lose.
I know.
I mean, the managerial decision going into the top of the ninth in that fifth game is going to be something that, you know, 50 years from now, people who are young hipsters who will then be old codgers will be arguing with each other over their beers about.
And, but to us, it's a Bill Buckner moment.
Well, I mean, from a managerial standpoint, it's kind of got that flavor to it.
Yes. Yes.
You know, the starting pitcher, Harvey, insisted that he be sent out for the ninth inning. And you know what? The Mets fans have no one to blame but themselves because they set up a chant all through the stadium. The place was Harvey, Harvey, Harvey. Okay. And so the manager, apparently against his own better judgment, sent him out there to do that. And he never got any, he didn't get a single person out.
Yep.
So, And of course, the two tying runs that came in were chargeable to him.
Yes.
to go on a scoring binge like that.
I know.
I mean, because when I first, I wasn't watching. I went and watched later. But when I first saw, Royals win World Series in fifth game with come from behind victory, and then you go, of what?
Mm-hmm.
And but they were kind of miraculous. Yeah, they came from behind in how many different games from the playoffs forward?
A lot.
It was the governor of Texas who cursed the Astros. But remember, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Greg Abbott sent out that tweet saying, "Congratulations to the Houston Astros." And it wasn't over yet, and the Royals went on to win.
Well, the only thing that I really do like about it is that all of the sports pundits said that there was no way Kansas City was going to win. I mean, after that heartbreaker in the seventh game last year, when they lost the series,
one pop foul away.
Yeah, exactly. So they wanted it really bad this year, and. And they were, let's see, it was the Royals and the Mets were ranked among all of professional baseball, the 19th and 20th teams in the rankings, which just goes to show you that.
Yeah, somebody cleaned up at the betting parlor.
Oh, yeah, the odds makers. Anybody who bet early in the year made a hell of a lot of money last night.
Yeah, but who would have?
I don't know. I would have bet on the Royals this year, though, just based on what I saw last year. And yeah, they lost a couple of key players, but they also picked up a couple of them too. That pitcher Johnny Cueto was a pitcher that he's just not consistent, but when he pitches good, man, he's good.
You know, for a woman who doesn't give a damn,
I just like baseball. I love baseball.
No, I'm a baseball fan, and whenever I get somewhere near enough to get into a major league stadium, I always try to go. Just
absolutely, baseball been very, very good to me.
First professional baseball game I ever saw was in the old Cincinnati Crosley Field.
Oh wow, you old?
Yeah. It was the year before they moved over to that great big concrete donut, Riverfront Stadium.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the beginning of the generation of ugly stadiums. They all looked alike. Three Rivers, Riverfront, Atlanta, Fulton County, who else? Bush Stadium in St. Louis. Yeah.
Well, and Comiskey Park. They tore Comiskey Park down and built that new ugly thing in Chicago for the White Sox.
But at least it's not a concrete donut.
Well, that's true. But I'll tell you, before they ever touch Wrigley Field, there will be riots in the streets in Chicago.
No doubt. Well, a great story, at least the way my father told it. You know, once upon a time, the Bears.
The Bears.
Yeah. They played in Wrigley.
Yeah.
And they moved out of Wrigley because of a disagreement between P.K. Wrigley and George Halas.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that story.
George Halas wanted to redo the seating so that there would be less leg room so that you could cram more human beings into the stadium to make more money for George Halas. Because
Halas could work for the airlines.
Well, no kidding. I mean, I think that's where the idea came from because, you know, George Halas has a much narrower window of opportunity to cram people into stadiums than, say, a baseball team owner does with, you know, what was back then, 75 games a season?
Oh, yeah.
And P.K. Wrigley said no, hell no, that he would not. Somebody comes to the ballpark, they deserve to sit there and enjoy themselves and not be all cramped up.
Yep.
So, Halas, that's how Halas went away, or at least that's the way my dad explained it to me.
They got a nice stadium out of it, but goddamn, it's cold down there.
There's nothing much going to be ameliorated about that by virtue of the fact that it's, well, you know, Chicago.
Well, and that it's sitting right off of Lake Michigan, and when that cold air blows in off that water, oh, man.
Well, it's kind of like the old stadium in Cleveland, right?
Yeah,
just sitting there right on the lake. Hey, because it is Moran Monday, shall we work in a Moran?
Oh, let's.
How about we go down to Mississippi, Stan, Carol?
too easy, but go ahead.
Let's go down to Tupelo. Tupelo. Tupelo, Mississippi. and our Moran question is 61-year-old Marshall W. Leonard. Mm-hmm. He had gotten very, very angry over, well, of course. I mean, would you care to fill in the blank what he was angry about? I mean, remember, it's Mississippi.
The gays, Planned Parenthood.
Nope, no.
Religion.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, come on. Guns?
Nope. Come on, I already gave you, it's Mississippi.
God, guns and gays, god damn it. What do you, the wrong colors?
No. Something that really matters. Your Confederate flag.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. There was a move on to change to get the Confederate flag part of the Mississippi state flag, you know, out.
Yeah, I heard they took the flag down at Ole Miss.
Well, that too. But so Marshall W. Leonard, 61 years old, proud Confederate, declared, well, he kind of declared war on Walmart.
How'd that work out for him?
Well, he declared war on the Walmart, Carol, because the Walmart was refusing to sell Confederate flags, known in these parts as the Devil's Diaper.
Yeah.
And because they wouldn't, and I mean, we're laughing, but no, this is very serious. He declared that he was going to get even with Walmart and the Tupelo Daily Journal. A not-so-gentle reminder that being a journalist is not necessarily a safe occupation in the United States of America.
Yeah.
On October 28th, he posted over at the Tupelo Daily Journal Facebook page, "Journal Corporate, you are on your final warning. You are part of the problem. As a result of this, y'all are going down along with Walmart, WTVA, Reed's Department Store, and all the rest of the anti-American crooks. I'm not kidding. No messing around anymore." Okay? Because he'd been, you know, he'd happily stepped up to cameras and said, "I just want y'all to know the Confederate flag had nothing to do with race."
Okay.
A change in the state flag ain't going to change nothing. There's still always going to be hate. There will always be racism. At least if I got anything to do with it. No, sorry, he didn't say that part. Sunday... apparently Sunday morning, he just walked up to the Walmart and threw a bomb inside it, Carol.
Shit.
No kidding. Just walked right up. Went, yeah. And of course, yeah, I mean, God, he looks like a member of a Lynyrd Skynyrd tribute band, of course. He's facing life. He's been charged with placing an explosive device. According to Tupelo Police Chief Bart Aguirre, a vehicle pulled up to the night entrance of the North Gloucester Walmart about 1:30 a.m., and a white male got out, lit the package, and threw it in the vestibule. I didn't know Walmarts had a vestibule. Wonder if they got a bowl of 20-year-old desiccated butter mints.
You took the words right out of my mouth.
I knew you were going there. There was an employee on break, and the suspect told him, "You better run." And the employee did run and was away from harm when the package went off. It wasn't a large explosion. Didn't cause a lot of damage to the store. Oh, great. Thanks, Chief. Thanks, Chief Police Chief Bart Aguirre. Now it's a competition. That little lily-livered piss ant don't know how to make a bomb worth dick. My God, I'll show him. Yeah. So,
he's facing life.
Wonder how many guns he had at home.
More than one?
Here's the fun thing. They didn't catch him right away after he bombed the Walmart. The journal reports it was the state flag that led to his arrest. An officer in the area spotted a small silver car with a huge Mississippi flag sticking up through the sunroof. Saw the car run the red light in front of Walmart. The officer pulled it, and this is the quote: "The officer pulled him over for the traffic violation. But when the calls started coming in, we quickly figured out we needed to hang on to this suspect. We still have some more interviews to do and still need to search his car before we take him in front of a judge Tuesday."
He clearly missed the finer points of the incognito.
Yeah, but wait, there's one final detail here. I may have the accent all wrong.
I doubt it. Your Jubilation T corn pone's doing pretty good.
No, but I hate it when, I mean, it's always interesting. It leaves you wanting more. It really does. I'm going to have to check and see if I can remember to find the follow up on this because of the final sentence, the final paragraph of the news story, Carol.
Yes.
Officials are still waiting to get details of Lynyrd's prior criminal history in Illinois and Wisconsin. Gosh darn it! You can have my Mississippi Confederate flag when you pry it from my cold, dead, cheese-headed fingers, dear Hay. Yeah.
I was going up Independence Avenue on my way downtown today, and there was a guy with one of those rolling coal trucks with a Confederate flag, full-size Confederate flag on one side, and a full-size American flag on the other. And I could not get away from him. You know, 75 degrees on the 2nd of November. You want to roll down your windows in your car.
Oh, I've got a Confederate flag in a truck goes down my road every day, and I know who it is. And it's just like, it's a kid that Ferg went to school with. And not only is it a Confederate flag in a truck, it's a Confederate flag in a rolling coal truck. You know, one of those modified diesels that could spit out, you know, a metric ton of particulate filth at the press of a button.
I just want to scream when I see those things.
Well, okay, so we can take that next step, too. This is kind of fascinating. It was a story from the L.A. Times, and I'm trying to remember. I think it was Sylvia that put me onto it. You know, Volkswagen got busted for dummying up their, you know, diesel cars so that they'd pass emissions, right? Well, what the LA Times article pointed out is all these diesel vehicles are probably affected to one degree or another by this. In other words, it weren't necessarily just the Volkswagens. And then they went in, and then there was the story of the aftermarket modification of diesel pickup trucks and the rolling coal phenomenon.
Yes.
And you know, if you, and then National Petroleum Radio tried to interview some of them, they were like, "Yeah, we don't want to be interviewed. I mean, we think we're legal."
I want to know how these guys don't get pulled over, but they don't.
Oh no, no, because half the cops are going, "God damn, I wish I had me one of them."
Independence is like the white Ferguson, and I know there were like four squad cars that passed both of us.
And just, yeah,
just
no big
right
deal.
No big deal to them.
Oh, and by the way, I have received a correction from Jenny in Wisconsin.
Yes.
Yeah. Wisconsin subject line, Wisconsin accent. Okay, you really pissed me off.
Oh.
It's not dear hey, it's ya dear hey. Get it right. Ya dear hey. Ya dear hey. I first learned about it. One of my roommates was from somewhere in Wisconsin my freshman year of college and taught me all about der hey, and no, that's not a euphemism for anything else. Damn it, you dirty-minded woman, you.
Hey, a dirty mind is its own reward, Sparky.
Well, you damn right it is. I remember hearing about der hey, but I forgot about the ya part. Ya der hey. God.
Oh, one little last thing. John Fugel saying, if you don't follow his Twitter feed, you should.
I should.
You do?
No, I should. I do should.
Oh, should, definitely. He just posted a little while ago, having failed to capture the Bernie vote with campaign hashtag Feel the Bush. Deb plans to cut staff and spending with the new hashtag Trim the Bush.
They just write themselves, don't they?
They really do. I did a spit take when I saw that one.
I had to laugh when I saw the that he's rebranded.
Yeah.
Apparently the rent came due on the exclamation point and he couldn't afford it anymore.
Oh, so it's not Jeb, yeah.
No, it's Jeb can fix it. Isn't that just pitiable?
Can I get a Sharpie? Jeb can fix what W's fucked up.
Oh, apparently lots of people had fun with it. Especially on the Twitters. Yeah. Let's see here. Tom Bagioni, is really good at finding all his Twitter stuff over at Raw Story. And yeah, this is hilarious. Jeb can fix it. And it's, I don't know if this is New Hampshire or Iowa, but let's see here. Well, speaking of John Fugel saying, Jeb can fix it actually refers to the 2000 election in Florida. another guy said, honestly, I thought Jeb can fix it was one of those shows on TV land that nobody watches, starring Wayne Knight or someone like that. Jeb can fix it sounds less like an expression of confidence in his governing ability than a desperate plea not to give up on his campaign. Well, that's analytical, but true.
True.
Yeah. No, I got $100 million. We can fix this. Rex Hupke tweeted, slogans that lost to Jeb can fix it. Jeb can fox it. Jebgasm! exclamation point. Return of the Jebi. And then all caps, Jeb can do the stuff that will fix the things. That's good. They really are the most out of touch, nerdy, hateful, weird a political family in America, aren't they?
They really.
And yet, I heard some member of the for profit media the other day saying, "Well, you know, they're particularly offended by Trump's candidacy because you know the Bushes have this history of service to the country, and public service is what the Bushes are all about."
No, the Kennedys have a history.
Yeah, you mean the Kennedys? who buried a couple for trying?
The Bushes have a history of serving themselves. This country's been a big buffet to them.
Well, I mean, you know how they came into money, right? Up until the early 20th century, that bunch had mostly been shopkeepers with the occasional somebody going to Yale to become a minister.
Yep.
But during the First World War, one of that miserable bunch got appointed to the War Materiels Board.
Mm-hmm.
And got there because he had been sort of a low-rent partner of John D. Rockefeller. Some railroad connection or something. I forget the particulars. And from World War I forward, the Bush family has spent its entire existence getting its front feet in the trough and then figuring out how to get the back ones in there with it.
Yep.
Let's see. Jeb is in town with a new slogan, Jeb Can Fix It. Question is, does that refer to America or his campaign?
Well, he can't fix that. He built that.
Too much debt, Jeb can fix it. Too many wars, Jeb can fix it. That nagging shoulder injury, Jeb can fix it. Clogged drain, Jeb can fix it. Jeb can fix it. Some restriction may apply. Can, not will, not under warranty. If social conditions persist, consult another candidate.
Poor Jeb, yeah. I really did used to think he was the smart one.
This is good. Pitch meeting. How about Jeb can fix it? Jeb, who cares? I hate my brother. I hate my father. I hate my life. So it's a go, then. And then, last but certainly not least, And as much as I loathe, detest, and despise Donald J. Trump, billionaire, he owns a mansion and a yacht. Here's an interesting piece of information. Devin points out the Bushes sold cannons to both sides in the Civil War.
Hey, hedge your bets.
Wouldn't surprise me a damn bit. You got to love Donald J. Trump for the fact that he has just, I mean, he really has. He has bullied Jebya, hasn't he?
Completely.
I mean, if Jebya hated all the noogies that he got and all the wedgies and swirlies that he got from W growing up, Donald Trump is just putting on a master class on how to bully a Bush.
Absolutely.
So Trump tweeted, Jeb's new slogan, Jeb can fix it. I never thought of Jeb as a crook. Stupid message. The word fix is not a good one to use in politics.
Yeah.
I never thought of Jeb as a crook. But then again, nobody really much accuses Donald J. Trump of doing much thinking either.
No, they don't. Oh, and Ivana came out and said, oh, I would make a much better first lady. I don't know what he's going to do with his third wife.
Well, she said, yeah, and she said what, Marinka can't speak?
Yes.
What is her name?
I don't know.
Skating rink? I mean, I can't remember his wife's name, but anyway.
She's from Slovenia or something?
All we know is this. Donald wishes his daughter wasn't his daughter because she's definitely hot and he would definitely date her.
Yeah, I always thought, you know, Donald's campaign slogan should be Ivanka for vice president because she's so fuckable.
Yeah. Uncle Daddy! Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was strictly reserved for the South, but apparently not.
No. It gets all.
I guess they do that in the Hamptons, too.
Oh, darling, you have no idea what goes on behind it. But when we got behind closed doors. You have to sing it with your teeth clenched, right? Oh, and Devin reminds us that, yeah, while the Bushes sold cannons to both sides in the Civil War, the Walkers funded both sides. Match made in hell.
Oh, no kidding.
Nice bunch, wouldn't you say?
No, and then all this whining about the debate from the RNC. Oh my God!
They're not going to go forward with the debate in Houston. They just can't.
They just can't.
NBC cannot be trusted.
They have to pick the moderators. They have to pick the questions. And in fact, let's just scrap the whole thing, and we'll just all put out infomercials.
Well, did you hear what Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, future anointed king of America, son of Rafael Eduardo Cruz, said?
I try not to.
Well, me too, but... No, he said, you know what I'd like to have? I'd like to have a debate that was moderated by Mark Levin and Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. Now, by golly, we'd get some questions then. At which point, as far away as, even in far San Francisco could be heard, the frustrated voice of Michael Savage going, Newman. Oh, God. They've stole my shtick, I'm telling you. They stole my shtick.
How big would the chairs have to be to put that many gas bags behind a desk?
But it could be kind of fun, couldn't it? I mean, you wouldn't have to worry about any journalism actually taking place.
Well, I'd laugh. It would be oh, man, I would cover that in a heartbeat.
And by the way, Gerald pointing out, poor Jeb, Shaka, when the walls fell. That would be our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. And it would be...
God!
He tasks me. He tasks me, and I shall have him.
Oh, God.
You know what? You know what, Carol? If this was taking place at, between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m., we could be our own little morning zoo crew, couldn't we?
We really could. We really could. And I can't, you know, I think they're hysterically funny, except they're so damn dangerous. And because I can't believe the number of rubes who actually fall for this crap. And I will spend like 5 minutes on a conservative website or a conservative Facebook page just to see what they're saying. And it's like, just to hear how they talk about liberals. And I'm positively stunned at the stupidity. And just, I'll laugh for a while, and then I just look at it and go, these people are criminally insane. And they walk among us, and they vote. Oh, God, and they breed. Oh, shit, now they're homeschooling.
Well, but at least they're not actually teaching anything in the homeschooling. Just waiting for the rapture.
Well, I mean, they're not teaching, you know, the three R's. Or, well, maybe they are republicanism, right-wingery. What's the third one?
Right to laugh.
That's right.
Well, Carol, it has been a lovely discussion. I'm so glad you called.
It has been. And you thought I didn't know anything about baseball.
Well, I know you knowed lots about baseball, but I thought you'd given up on it or something.
No, I actually, I love the game. I miss being able to go to stadiums where, and being in cities where, you know, the unconditional love. Because in my lifetime, the Cubs are going to win the World Series. They have to.
You know, infinite monkeys, infinite typewriters, one of them's going to come up with Hamlet.
You mock me.
No, I mean, who in America? I think the hardest core Yankees fan would be okay with seeing the Cubs win the World Series.
I think they would, too. I think that is one team America would embrace. Just because, you know, 107 years is a long time.
But the last series they were in was 1938 when they lost to the Yankees. That was the year of the alleged Babe Ruth called shot.
Yes.
Oh, God, Michael and Madison just sent me a delightful graphic.
Yes?
Yeah. Bob the Builder, can we fix it?
And then no.
A picture of a rather portulant, unibrowed child taking a bite out of a cookie jar with Jeb written on it. Hey, Jeb can fix it. Yeah. Oh, by the way, Texas Betsy informs me that the Cubs can win the World Series only in a year when the Yankees have already been eliminated. There are limits to the goodwill of a Yankees fan.
Well, that part is probably true.
Oh, okay. So I'm so wrong. Marty out in California says this hardcore Giants fan would mind it a very great deal. Thank you very much. Here's the graphic of graphics. It's a three panel photo. Shows Al Gore, president, Florida, projected winner, 25 electoral votes, Al Gore. And then it shows the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 right-wing operatives who were sent to terrorize the vote, the ballot counting, and then at the bottom in Florida, and then at the bottom it shows Poppy and Dim Leader and Jebya, and underneath it says in the corner, Jeb can fix it.
Indeed.
So maybe, I think we could hillbilly it up a little bit and say, Jeb done fixed it.
That year he did.
Yeah. Roger in Oregon says, bomb at Walmart? I gots my questions. Was the bomb fashioned like the Netanyahu cartoon one, sacrificing power for visual form? Why are they calling it a bomb instead of an IED? Was it store-bought or a homemade improvised thing?
Because I suspect it looked a whole lot more like what Wile E. Coyote would build.
Well, no, a white guy threw it, so it can't possibly be an IED. Only Muslims can do IEDs.
That's Muslims.
Muslims. Islamic!
I love it every time you do that.
If a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Christian does it, it's just a homemade bomb. So I think that is a very trenchant observation on Roger's part. Yes, indeed, and I appreciate it.
Indeed. Thank you, Roger. And on that note?
Yes, indeed. You have yourself a lovely evening, and give our regards to the folks out there in Hooterville, and hey to the folks over at the Ballerina.
Swan Lake Mobile Home.
Trailer Park and Country Club. Amen. Absolutely. One of these days. It's the only reason
to dream, Robert.
That's the onlyest reason I buys a lottery ticket anymore. Ballerina, Swan Lake, Trailer Park, and Country Club.
Oh, that's going to be one of our all-time classics.
I swear, we're going to hold the horn in there.
We could do it, too.
Yes, we could.
I know people in there.
Oh, you know people?
I know people. I'll have my people talk to their people.
Do, and then have your people call my people.
Absolutely.
People. We got a lot of people. We're very knowledgeable. See you, Carol.
Bye, buddy.
Bye now. Ooh, that was fun. The one and only Carol Baker. By the way, a little bit of news coming out of Canada, courtesy of Ron in the Unfrozen North. Ron says, we're awaiting the installation of the new prime minister and his cabinet on Wednesday. Part of the ritual is for all the newly anointed to appear before the Governor General to be sworn in. The new Prime Minister and the entire cabinet will arrive in a single chartered bus to demonstrate that we, once again, have a government of the people. Stephen Harper must be just somewhere dining on his liver. It's all show business, says Ron. But it's quite the visual change from limousines arriving with individual very important, wait a minute, very important people. Yes, yes. It will be interesting to see if that message carries over into our daily government. Yay, I wouldn't go more than 30-74 if I were you, Ron. Ron also asked, did anyone see the news item that TransCanada has asked the U.S. government to suspend its review of the Keystone XL pipeline? No, I had not seen that. Does that mean they're just giving up? I've never heard of a hydrocarbon company just going, screw it. From Australia, Robert writes, subject line, Jeb can fix it. Jeb can fix it? In the UK, the BBC has had to remove all references to the long-running kids show Jim Will Fix It due to the child sex scandal. Not a good slogan. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Somebody needs to get that out into the Twitter sphere real quick. Did anybody in the Jebya campaign happen to know that there's a sex scandal surrounding Jim Will Fix It? Oh, they're hopelessly clueless. They're just pathetically clueless. And speaking of child sex scandals, from the Department of Ew. Over there at Subway, eat fresh! Former spokesman Jared Fogel, the previous news, it turns out he was a sexual predator and a child sex fiend and all of that kind of stuff. He's pled guilty. He's entered a plea deal. He'll serve 5 to 12.5 years in prison and pay $1.4 million in restitution, which by the time he gets out 5 to 12.5 years from now will still leave him a quite wealthy man. Well, the New York Post has... The New York Post published transcripts of audio tapes that were secretly recorded of us. The New York Post never being one for subtlety. We're saving subtle for Prayer Meeting Wednesday, for those of you who know what I'm talking about. Sicko Jared bragged about child sex on secret recordings. And again, this goes back to the stuff that was planned for the Dr. Phil program, because necessarily somebody's got to make a buck of this, and why not Dr. Phil? In one of the recordings, he said, "Oh, get the hockey puck and get the garbage can, because there may be vomiting. I had a little boy. It was amazing. It just felt so good. I mean, it felt so good." So the woman who was recording him, Rochelle Herman Walrund, a former Florida journalist who befriended him so as to expose his creeperness, and for little boys and girls, and he said, and both of them. And he was so far in the depths of his disgusting behavior. He said, "I would fly us clear across the world if we needed to Thailand or wherever we want to go. If we're going to try to get some young kids with us, it would be a lot easier." Good God. But... here's the here's the gross part. The recordings took place over the course of 10 years, and she wore a wire for the FBI for 4.5 years. In an interview with WWSB, not WSB, but WWSB, she said, "That was my biggest question. Why was it taking so long? A case of this size just happens to take that long, and that's what I was told." So while the FBI sat around, it is arguable that in waiting, you know, building their case, more children were sexually victimized. Via the Free Thought Project, they write, "All of this paints a picture of a wealthy, connected pedophile who had years to direct his energies into victimizing more and more children. During this time, he enriched and enabled those who provided access to the kids in the U.S. and in other countries. For at least 4 years, the FBI had evidence of Jared Fogel's criminal behavior and chose to let the abuse continue. The casual excuse is the bureaucracy itself. But we know that when the government wants to act quickly, it does. It does not hesitate in killing, disappearing, or jailing those it deems that are a threat to government. And it sets aside constitutional protections to do so. However, when the threat is in the form of sexual predation on children, government takes its time because it just happens to take that long." And the Free Thought Project notes that this case should not simply disappear without questions being put to the FBI as to why they presumably let child sexual abuse simply go on. Instead of intervening to stop it. And of course, the answer to that, as Jug of Punch has noted in the chat room, is because capitalism.
Probably. Yeah.
19 minutes before the hour. And we don't have the urgency of trying to meet a nightly fundraising goal because Shirley's Wisconsin Challenge was met. And thank you to Bob and Chris and Bill and Jay and Albert and Randy. And I don't have the list in front of me, but thank you one and all. But I will note it would be a good time to try to get a... either get out a little bit in front, or I can remind us all of Joan's suggestion that we work toward having 400 people who will commit to $10 a month, you know, less than 17 cents per hour of programming. $10 in a month? Most people spend more than $10 on crummy fast food in a month. And I would submit that supporting this community is probably of more value than a clown burger, you know, for four. Now, Bob, you can get two quarter pounders for $4. Well, then that means you could get five quarter pounders for, well, I don't know. We might have to rethink that whole subscription thing. I mean, five quarter pounders. I ate one the other day, and I paid for it for a day and a half. Yep, that's true. Roger in Oregon with an observation on the Jared Fogle thing and the FBI. It only takes a long time when they're deciding whether or not the perpetrators are too big to fail, or if they've decided to help the statute of limitations run out. Ooh, that's very cynical, Roger, but I'm not going to fight with you over it. And a note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa, who had a fabulous costume, I got to tell you, a fabulous costume for Halloween. Brother Deacon Asa says, further to Ron's news update from the unfrozen north, I'd like to add that the new big gummit liberal getting sworn in on Wednesday is bringing with him 25 cabinet members. Contrast that with Harper's small government conservative cabinet of 40 ministers. That small government, conservative government, was the largest government, gummint, G-U-M-M-I-N-T, in Canadian history, or as they say in Quebec, histoire. Didn't learn a lot of French, but I got a couple of words banging around there. It is more in Monday, and we got about 16 minutes left in the program. Now, if you've got something to say, do it now. Do not wait until 3 minutes before the program and go, hey, Bob. No. 304-574-8178 or 304-663-HORN or Skype to Skype Bob Kincaid Horn. You didn't think we were going to get through More and Monday without a reference to mumbling Ben Carson, did you? No, don't worry. I don't have any actual mumbling for us. What a pity. But Mumblin' Ben went to Nash Vegas this past weekend to apparently a really great big mega church in an area called in the greater Nash Vegas area called Madison. He went to Cornerstone Church. Mm-hmm. And Cornerstone is, according to the Tennessean, which is Nashville's newspaper, one of the largest churches in Metro Nashville. And he religioned it up real good. And at one point in time, he set up a straw man and just beat the stuffing out of him, responding to imaginary progressives who say, they say, Carson, you know, how can you be a surgeon, a neurosurgeon, and believe that God created the earth and not believe in evolution, which is the basis of all knowledge and all science? Now, remind you, he has said evolution is a fantasy, and he has said, evolution is satanic. The Big Bang Theory is a fairy tale. And he continued during the, and he did two shows there. He did two shows at Cornerstone Church. Because it's big and they can't get everybody into their giant auditorium. And, you know, being Nashville, I bet they have got some of the most hot, highfalutin, amazing audio-visual. And I bet the house, oh, dear God, the house band is probably comprised of session players from the industry. And, oh, dear. So they say, Carson, you know, how can you be a surgeon and a neurosurgeon and believe that God created the earth and not believe in evolution, which is the basis of all knowledge and all science? Look at him. He won't open his eyes. He won't open his eyes. Butt lickers! Sorry. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. But I do believe God created us. And I did just fine. I think that's open to interpretation. So I don't know where they get that stuff from, you know. It's not true. And in fact, the more you know about God and the deeper your relationship with God, I think the more intricate becomes your knowledge of the way things work, including the human body. Okay, really, really. Is this dude just blazing up with, you know, he's just setting fire to entire foot-long buds of Blueberry Hill or Strawberry Skunk or Bubba Gump Kush or whatever it is. I mean, does Ben Carson know Willie Nelson? Because, I mean, dude is seriously mellow. And yet at the same time, being interviewed by CNN, according to the Tennessean, Mumbling Ben says, I'm not a real religious person, you know. I'm a person who has deep and abiding faith and relationship with God. But I'm not really into a lot of religious dogma and rituals. You can't do that. You can't do this. I don't believe in that. I believe you have to have a deep and abiding faith in God. I mean, but you can't get married. You can't do that. And you can't be lesbian Marian either. You can't do this. Welcoming Mumbling Ben to Cornerstone Church was none other than representing Diane Black. Mm-hmm. You know, wherever Diane Black goes, the collective IQ of the group plummets by about 15,000 points. But he worked Nash Vegas real good. Now Friday he had been in Memphis. Mm-hmm. Friday he'd been in Memphis. Oh, why can't I cue this up fast enough? I gotta try. I gotta at least try. There it is. Okay, hold on. I'll stop that. Let me see if we're... Okay, maybe, just maybe.
Boy, you got...
There it is.
They've got gospel. Reverend glad to see you when you haven't got a prayer. But boy, you got a prayer in Memphis.
Here it is.
Every Friday at the Hollywood, and they brought me down to see her, and they asked me if I would do a little number, and I sang with all my might. She said, "Tell me, are you a Christian child?" And I said, "Ma'am, I am tonight."
How glory! Ben Carson, are you a Christian?
Ma'am, I am tonight. Are you writing a check? I'm definitely a Christian.
Yeah, because, see, Mumbling Ben Carson hung out with the mayor of Franklin, Tennessee, Ken Moore, and ran the money hustle on Saturday morning. And then later Saturday, he went over to an area in Las Vegas called Belmead. And hustled up some more money, and then did two shows at the Cornerstone, which ain't near as fun as going to Reverend Al Green's church over there in Memphis. Not by a long shot. 8 minutes before the program's close, and I guess it would be. Well, we have to mention the passing of. Because it would be unfair. You know, for years we referred to him as Half-Dead Fred. Fred Thompson died at 73. People who had known him in the United States Senate were completely surprised to hear of his passing. They thought it had happened years previous. Well, burn in hell for that one. And one last thing. You're going to hear a lot about this as it rolls out there. Isaac first put me onto it. Anonymous says that it has hacked a bunch of accounts and has found a bunch of Klansmen. Of course, in federal, state, and local governments. And there will be a document dump on November the 5th. I confess to a modicum of skepticism. Senator Dan Coats of Indiana, a Republican, has already been outed. Senator Tom Tillis of North Carolina, Senator Johnny Isaacson of Georgia. And in the case of any three of those, Talibandiana, as Joan would know, she's in Talibandiana, and just ask Malloy about Johnny Isaacson, and God knows Ron and Raleigh can tell us anything we could possibly want to know about Tom Tillis. Here's the thing. Actually being a Klansman in those states with that electorate will get you votes, not lose them. But nonetheless, the word came out, and Dan Coats was on the list, and someone on his staff went to the Twitter and said, "For those who are asking, I've never had any affiliation with the Ku Klux Klan and deplore all forms of racial discrimination. This is baseless internet garbage of the worst kind." Well, you know, he deplores all kinds of racial discrimination, unless it's like voter suppression and photo IDs and all of that crap that's specifically designed for keeping, you know, those people from voting. So a statement was put out by a person calling himself Amped Attacks. It's published in the International Business Times. Mm-hmm. And Amped Attacks said the following. "All I can really say without fully admitting to federal charges is that several databases were dumped from different KKK websites that all linked their emails to the politicians in question. And here's where the logic part comes in. And I'm not defending Dan Coats, Johnny Isaacson, Tom Tillis, or anybody else. But the logic is troubling here. The only way their emails would have been on there to begin with is if they showed support when signing up for the site or filled out an application. It is, after all, the internet, isn't it? The fact that the name is on there is not proof that the person in question is the person who... No, it's proof that somebody sent that email address. So while I am more than willing to believe that Tom Tillis is a Klansman, John Cornyn is a Klansman, and Johnny Isaacson are Klansmen, and Dan Coats is a Klansman, hell, I wouldn't be surprised if... you know what? We know that Jefferson Jefferson Beauregard Davis the Third. No. What's his last name? Come on, I can't. But anyway, the senator from Alabama, junior senator. We know that he wouldn't be a Klansman because he once said, "You know, I once thought that the Klan was pretty cool until I found out they smoked the marijuanas." So he's definitely not it. No. So all I'll suggest is just judge this stuff carefully and pay. And because, quite frankly, when I saw and it was kind of a thing. When I saw that Amped Attacks had, unless they was signed up, yeah, no. There it is. Yeah, let's go back to that quote again before we just roll on out of here. The quote from Amped Attacks is... where did it go? All link their emails to the politicians in questions, and the only way their emails would have been on there to begin with is if they showed support when signing up for the site or filled out an application. That's not the way the quote originally read. It has apparently been fixed in the last few hours. Unless they supported it or was involved in it, was the original quote. Unless they supported it or was involved in it. Yes, absolutely, Carol Baker. Thank you very kindly. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third. Sessions, that's his name. And there was two previous Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions as before him. Hallelujah, glory. Maybe four, because sometimes you go the first, and then junior, and then the second, and then the third. It's all about how you count down now. Precisely. And so, thank you very kindly. It is time to get out of here. And thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Glenn, very kindly for becoming a $10 a month subscriber. It is much appreciated. Very much indeed. Thank you kindly. We may get to this 400 number, and wouldn't that be cool? I'd never have to say anything about fundraising again. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you. To our news ninjas, thank you. John Fox, Ben Birch, thank you to the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.